Well, a former Kansas Agriculture Secretary is sounding the alarm over water use in the state, and specifically why those of us in eastern Kansas should be concerned about the water table out west. Josh Swati is also a former state lawmaker and a fifth-generation farmer who grew up in Ellsworth County in the middle of the state. He's now a vice president of the Land Institute. That's an agricultural and environmental research center based in Salina. And Josh, so good to have you here. Welcome to Up to Date.
Thank you, Steve. It's good to be here.
So this is going to be a hard sell, Josh. Why should we out here in eastern Kansas give three hoots about water levels way out west?
It is a long way away from here. A lot of Kansas Cityans sometimes don't even visit some of those parts of western Kansas except when they're driving out to go skiing.
Yes.
So they know I-70 pretty well.
But, I've been there. Yeah.
But that's about it. But as I joked earlier this week when I was speaking to a group, the state does tip downhill this direction. So generally things that are happening out there end up affecting this area.
Do you mean that literally?
Well, in some cases, and not necessarily with all water. The Ogallala Aquifer, of course, is pretty stationary out in the western third of the state of Kansas. But nevertheless, even the surface water issues, most of the rivers in the state of Kansas run east to west, and we drop from around 4,000 feet in elevation in western Kansas to 800 or whatever it is here at the Missouri River. So it drops quite a bit.
So what happens out there does affect us in a sense out here.
Absolutely. And even beyond that, just the policy decisions. The bulk of the population lives here on the eastern side of the state. They should pay attention to the decisions and the activities going on out in western Kansas and even further beyond in eastern Colorado, although we, of course, don't have as much control over that.
Now, out here, we hear a lot about drought conditions out west in western Kansas and then elsewhere as well, of course. How bad is it out west right now, Josh?
It's pretty bad, although it's a reminder to people here. We average maybe around 16 inches of rainfall in western Kansas, and by the time you get to eastern Kansas, it's up to 44, in southeast Kansas, 48 inches of rainfall. But Kansas is a place that swings pretty wildly, and even here, even though that's the average, there's a lot of latitude in that from a year-to-year basis. And Kansas Cityans probably know it's been dry here, and it's been dry the last couple of years. And it can get very dry in this area, although for the past few decades, we maybe haven't seen it as much. But it's particularly dry in western Kansas and especially southwest Kansas.
Well, the two magic words when it comes to western Kansas and water, it seems to me, is this Ogallala Aquifer that you just mentioned. What is that thing, and why is it so important to what's going on?
It's an ancient pool of water that's buried beneath the sand and the soil out there that's really made us be able to have agriculture at a highly productive rate in western Kansas and really running from the panhandle of Texas all the way up into Nebraska.
It's huge.
It's huge. It's huge.
And how far under the surface is it?
It varies, but it can be very deep, several hundred feet deep, and it can also be shallow, maybe 100 feet deep, but it is getting deeper, or actually it's not getting deeper, but we are pumping more of it out, so we have to go deeper to find more of it.
Now, I saw a stat somewhere that said that the Ogallala Aquifer is said to be now 30% depleted. Does that sound about right to you?
It's hard to say as an average. I can't confirm that number, but there are some places where it's far worse than that. It's much more than 50% depleted. There are some places in the Ogallala, even where there's intensive pumping, that are actually seeing a higher level of recharge, where the aquifer is increasing. So it's a mysterious beast. That being said, though, those are the outliers. And if you looked at kind of a color map, the Ogallala is definitely depleting and depleting very rapidly.
And if it depletes, and let's go to a worst case scenario here, someday it runs out of water. What happens? What does that mean?
There are different kinds of depletion because the economies for pumping water are different. For corn, the economy shifts pretty fast, and so they'll stop growing corn. And the beef industry, which is very important to Kansas, Kansas has around $15 billion in ag receipts annually. Almost half of that comes from beef. Almost half. Think about everything else we grow in the state of Kansas. That gives an indication of how important the beef industry is. And a lot of that is due to the corn grown in southwest Kansas. Well, if they can't grow the corn there, that poses a serious challenge. And the economics on pumping for corn change pretty fast. Now, the economics for pumping water for human consumption, we'll be able to pump water for those cities for a long time. They can afford to do that because they don't need the gallonage. But those cities exist in many cases because of the agricultural industry out there, and it would change a lot if it wasn't there.
You know, Governor Brownback and other governors, for that matter, have taken steps to sort of conserve the water, to conserve the Ogallala, and make sure it extends its life for a number of years. Just in general, Josh, from your perspective from being vice president at the Land Institute, are we doing enough when it comes to preserving the Ogallala, or are we sort of short shrifting it a little bit?
Well, when you use the word preserving, even, it's an indication that we're not doing enough, because the state policy is for a managed decline. So there's really no preservation in place. We want to manage the decline, not use it so fast, but we fully recognize that it's a decline. And if that's the policy of the state of Kansas, I guess, you know, that's the decision and the course we've set. But I think a lot of people, especially eastern Kansans, might want to scratch their heads and say, do we really want to be fully engaged in a managed decline of such an important pool of water?
Because that suggests that someday it's going to run out.
It's going to run out.
And that can't happen from your vantage point here.
I think that's very unwise of us. It's very similar to taking the Colorado River and immediately over-appropriating it for a bunch of different uses, and now it doesn't reach the ocean, and we've got mm-hmm. major problems in the southwest United States. We should not take some of our most important pools, ancient pools of fresh water, and use them up in a manner of decades for some corn.
We're visiting with Josh Swati. He's a former state lawmaker. He's a vice president of the Salina-based Land Institute about water policy in Kansas and the Ogallala Aquifer. If you want to join our conversation, 816-235-2888 is our number here. Our email address, UpToDate at KCUR.org. You can also tweet us at KCUR UpToDate. Josh, you know, you're talking about the drought conditions for the last couple of years. Say that changes and we have heavy rains this coming spring. Does that take care of the problem? Does the Ogallala fill back up again and this conversation becomes somewhat moot here?
No, the recharge, and again, it's not 100% across the entire Ogallala. Some places it recharges quickly, but recharge, which is when you get surface water in the form usually of rain and it trickles down in, it's not a one-to-one ratio. And in some places, it really does not recharge at all off of those rains. And so simply getting a six-inch sort of gully washer, we would call it out there, is not going to take care of the problem.
Does it mitigate the problem?
In some places, it could mitigate the problem, but as a whole, it certainly does not mitigate the problem. And we're pumping at a rate so fast that we're really seeing dramatic declines year in and year out.
You know, I read, if I understand correctly here, there are parts of the state that already are regarded as dead zones. What parts of the state are we talking about, and what does that mean that they're a dead zone?
The groundwater management districts, there are five of them in the state. They manage those areas that have a lot of intensive pumping. And GMD1, which is kind of, if you went straight to the far western edge of the state of Kansas and right in the middle, maybe five or six counties there.
By Liberal.
No, that would be down in the southwest part.
I mean,
Scott City, okay. Leota, Tribune. Mm-hmm. It's pretty sparsely populated, but those are areas that would be considered, I hate to use the word dead zone because there's great people doing really good things out there, but there's very little pumping left there. They've already moved past the point of where it's economical to pump for crops.
And what does that mean for those communities out there?
They have to get very creative right now about future economic activity in and around agriculture. And that's currently, if you start to project 25 or 30 years out, and for city planners, they need to be looking that far out, you know you're going to have real problems.
What are they doing to take its place? What kinds of ideas might be out there to sort of, you know, help manage that?
You know, I'll offer two stories. The first comes from Northwest Kansas, where they've started what they call LEMAs, a local enhanced management area, where the farmers actually get together and decide amongst themselves how to lower overall consumption, because Kansas has in our water law what we call prior appropriation. So everybody that has a water right has a number, and the oldest, lowest number gets the water first. So if you have a number and your neighbor has a junior number to your senior number, you can shut them off. But that's a pretty ugly thing to do if your neighbor's farming side by side. So rather than doing that, they get together, they decide amongst themselves how to lower everything together, And extend the life of the aquifer. It's a pretty cool system.
These local enhanced management areas, or LEMAs, that you're talking about, this is the result of legislation that passed just last year, I think.
Either last year or the year before. It takes a little while to get in place. But as a sort of cautionary tale of other routes you could take, the state of Colorado and Kansas and Nebraska are in a Republican River Compact that governs one of the other major rivers that runs out of Colorado into Kansas, into Nebraska, and back into Kansas. And that compact governs how each state uses the water so they don't use too much. Kansas has sued both Nebraska and Colorado. Well, anyway, Colorado was out of compliance. They were using too much. Most of that use was from their corn farmers. And they could not, they had two options, either slow down the corn farmers or drain Bonnie Reservoir, which, again, if you're driving out to go skiing to Colorado, if you drive past Burlington right after you cross the Colorado line, 45 miles north of Burlington was really the only sort of recreational pool of water. And we're not talking about a pond. This was a large state lake with permanent recreational facilities, permanent shower facilities, boat ramps. They could either drain the lake or slightly slow down their corn farmers, and they could not find the political will to slow down the corn farmers. They drained the lake. If you drive up there now, it's a giant muddy pool. It's extraordinary.
Wow. This notion of LEMAs, again, local enhanced management areas, this sort of sense of self-governance, is it working in Kansas?
It does work, and this is the first time we've tried it. But I think the farmers in that particular area in Sherman County are excited about it. We have a mechanism at the state level to do that called an IGUCA, which is my favorite acronym in state government. It's Intensive Groundwater Use Control Areas, where the state comes in and says, you're going to get together in a room and figure this out amongst yourselves. And that works well, too, but it's always a little better when the locals decide to do it themselves.
Let's go to some phone calls here. Let's go to Mike from Baldwin City. Mike, you're on with Josh Swatty. Good morning.
Thank you for taking my call. I remember first reading about the Oglala Aquifer in the National Geographic article in the mid-'80s and after going out to Gove in Scott County for archaeological stuff in my high school. How does one deal with the schizophrenia in the policies between a Republicans that don't want to regulate things, yet situations like the Oglala Aquifer scream for regulation? And how does the you were mentioning the states or the counties in the middle out there, this little bit south of there, how does that sunflower coal plant affect the aquifer? Because I figure there's only so much amount of water, as you were previously stating. And are they in a situation where they're going to have to use Oglala water, whatever rainfall they get next stuff to use for both crops and slurry and coal? That's my question.
Yeah, Mike, what about the sunflower plant?
You know, they did have to acquire water rights, and there are, I think, around 14 what we call beneficial uses to water. And that means if you get a water right, you have to be using it for something. And that can be stock water for livestock, industrial use, municipal use, irrigation use. And Holcomb and Sunflower Electric had to purchase, I think, around 30,000 acres of water rights in anticipation of the future plant.
But the plant
is not being built at this time. So what they would do is buy sort of term permits with the anticipation of needing them in the future. But they would even change the use on that. So instead of being considered an irrigation use, it would become an industrial use. And I think that Sunflower only got 60% of that original water right because they would be using it year round instead of using it for irrigation.
You know, it's amazing to me how many rules and regs are already in place when it comes to water consumption in Kansas. It's a whole world unto itself.
It's a highly regulated industry, and it's kind of fun because there's a lot of farmers that still feel like they're in the Wild West and the free market. But when they're pumping water, there are meters. Kansas is a progressive state with our water policy, and we have meters on those pumps. We monitor how much you pump. If you overpump, you will be fined. If you pay the fine and keep overpumping, we'll lower the amount of water you get the next year. It's a heavily regulated industry.
Tom from Piper. Tom, you're on Up to Date. Good morning.
Good morning. I had a question about, you were talking about recharge. I had a question about when certain layers are pumped dry in the Oglala Aquifer, do I understand correctly that they are permanently altered and unable to recharge to a great extent?
Wow.
There are a number. The Ogallala is not a, you're right, it's not a gigantic pool of water kind of in the striated soil and sand out in western Kansas. There are different levels to it. And to be honest, we don't entirely understand how the water moves. In some places, it's very localized. So you could be next to your neighbor and pumping, and you're not affecting your neighbor's amount of water at all. There are other places where the minute you turn your center pivot on to pump your corn, your neighbor's amount of production from his well immediately goes down. So I can't say with certainty, but there's probably something to the fact that there are certain levels in that Ogallala that once you pump that water out of them, they are altered substantially, and they won't recharge for a very long time.
You know, Josh, we haven't even talked yet about one proposed remedy for all this, which is this aqueduct or pipeline that's been proposed to be built from the Missouri River in far northeast Kansas all the way out to western Kansas just to pump water out there. I've read that there's a new study underway to examine how feasible this is. There's already been one study done back in the 80s, early 80s, I think. What do you think? Is this thing a feasible idea, or is this crazy talk?
You know, when it's a pipeline, it's just too easy to lend itself to calling it a pipe dream. But that's really what it is. I cannot imagine that the state certainly should spend any taxpayer dollars on this. Frankly, if the Western Kansas irrigators want to spend the several billion dollars to put a pipeline in and they can get it done and they want to pay for it themselves, more power to them. But
I think several billion dollars.
There's no way it couldn't be pumping that much. And even though it's water, it would be a tremendous exercise in pumping that water.
But the logic behind it has to do with how much water potentially comes down the Missouri. Water's held up there in the reservoirs. There's excess water. So I guess that it's seen as a ready supply, perhaps. And are we talking about a pipeline or an aqueduct that would be like a canal system, or what are we talking about?
It's a little mix of both. And to the Corps of Engineers' credit, they found a pretty ingenious route where they take advantage. Kansas, the Flint Hills are geologically much higher than some of the land just to the west of them. The Flint Hills are that topographical region that you drive through just west of Topeka. And after you cross there at I-177, where you turn north to go to Manhattan, that's the high point in Kansas, and you dip down below that, and you don't reach that elevation again until the wind turbines in Ellsworth County, my home county, if you're familiar with there. So that's 60 or 70 miles there. So the Corps kind of figured out a way where you could pump it through a pipe, then turn it into a lazy river, then pump it into a pipe again. But I just want to remind people, when you're working against gravity, it requires a lot of energy and a lot of electricity to move anything, even water.
Well, Josh, you've been just great. Thank you for coming in. And what a great conversation. Let's do it again sometime.
Absolutely.
Josh Swati is a vice president out at the Land Institute. You can find more information about all of our broadcasts. Just go to kcur.org. Don't forget to follow KCUR on Facebook and this program on Twitter. We're at KCUR up to date.